just step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 428. This is our fall membership drive. I'm Lisa Sheps. I'm joined by co-host Nick Mayo. Try that again, Nick
Hello.
Mayo. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1, HD3, Hornsby. Each week, we look at theater from many angles. Stick with us while you listen to the skipping music.
In the eye of a hurricane, there is quiet for just a moment. A yellow sky. I was 12 when my mother died. She was holding.
It is Wednesday, August 30th, 2017. On the show today with the UT Department of Theater and Dance, they're going to be talking about their production of Building the Wall by Robert Schenken. Also, later on in the show, we'll have Candace Rusk and Craig Tungate, forgive me if I mispronounce that, talking about their show, Rosetta, the musical. And of course, this is the first week of our fall membership drive. But we will continue to have conversations about the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, and Trinidad and Tobago.
The Reynolds pamphlet.
Oh, and it just stops.
I really liked the remix version of the theme song you played, Lisa.
Well,
that was
really,
as the kids say, lit.
It was lit. It was lit. It was woke, as I like to say.
It was fresh.
Well, let me just tell you something. When it happened, I woke up.
It was extra.
It was extra. Well, first of all, before we go any further, we needed to give a shout out to co-host Nicole Shiro, who had family property in the Houston area, and it did not do well. So, of course, she's also reliving Sandy. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, shout out to Nicole. Our hearts are with you, darling, and you and all the other hurricane survivors. And as you heard of that first piece of music was indeed called Hurricane from a very little-known show called Hamilton.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it. So as I said, this is the first week of our fall membership drive, and we are lucky enough to have honorary co-host Mr. Tracy Schultz here to tell folks about it. Oh. So what's going on with this membership drive?
Well, membership drive is the time of the year that we come to you, our listenership, and ask you to please make a pledge to the station that you've come to love, Co-op Radio. 92% of it, of our
also,
funding comes
there's
from
a lot of
incentives to get folks to make a donation to Co-op, and the operators can tell you all about it.
Wonderful. Well, let me introduce the folks that are sitting here with us right now. We have Brant Pope. Hello, Brant.
Hello.
And we have David Sittler. Hi, David.
Hello.
David, did you know that there is a play called David and Lisa?
There is.
Y'all should do
right
it.
Into the microphone, David.
Also,
what'd I tell you?
Oh, yes. Yes, there is. There is. And there's also David and Goliath. Yes.
There is. But please, are you calling me Goliath? I don't want to go there. Yeah, see? That shut you up, didn't it? Yeah. Candace Rusk, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lisa.
I can't believe this is the first time you're on.
Yeah. I mean, first time. Yeah.
You're on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't lie to you. I know.
No, I would remember, I think.
Me too. Probably not.
Good to be here.
Craig Tungate.
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 Yeah, you got it right.
I said it right the first time, wrong
the
second
time. So
okay.
Great to be here,
Tungate. Wonderful. So we just have a few things that we're going to talk about. A lot of the stuff that we were going to talk about, we are now not going to talk about because Nicole was going to talk about it. But one of the things that I did want to say, that first piece was indeed Hurricane from Hamilton. We did have a major event, and it made me feel a little old, Nick. I have to tell you that on all the newscasts, when they were talking about before Harvey came in, it was a category four, and they said, unless you're 56 years old or older, you don't remember Texas ever having a hurricane like that. And I remember having a hurricane like that. It really depressed me.
Yeah. Your sweet 16. It flooded your sweet 16, right?
My sweet 3. Thank you very much.
I'm just teasing.
I was actually in the hospital during Hurricane Carla.
Wow.
I had a record-making disease called mumps encephalitis. There you go. Look it up.
Take that, Hurricane.
Take that, Hurricane Carla.
Take that.
Hurricane Harvey.
Carla ain't got nothing on my mumps.
But there's an interesting thing. I did not do a lot of research on this.
Sorry.
I did not do a lot of research on this because I thought Nicole Shiro was going to do it, but she pulled up a whole bunch of links about Houston artists, the Houston Theater District, a lot of the arts community in Houston coming together to help others, not only artists, but everybody in Houston. And what a terrible thing. And does anybody here have family or friends in Houston that's dealing with this?
I actually have some friends that are in town today, but I wanted to say that the city of Austin posted a website that has resources. I think that Glass Tire put it together. So resources specifically for artists.
Right. Yeah. So you can find that on, I want to say austin.gov, but it could be something else. I just Google it. Mm-hmm. Google it. But there are lots of stuff there. And I know the Theater District in Houston, which is where I got my start over at the Old Alley Theater, I believe is all underwater. So our hearts go out to all the people of Houston, but especially I'd like to throw a shout out in my heart to those Houston artists that are now struggling, because it's, you know, it's hard enough being an artist in this state and trying to make a living as an artist in this state without having to deal with this.
Yes. And the alley was just renovated.
Yeah. So that's got to... That's got to not be good.
Yeah,
I was going to say a different word, but I can't because I'm on the radio. So we did have an opening this week, Mr. Mayo. Did you?
Yes, Prince. The Prince. Yes, how Prince? How Prince?
The Prince of
yes,
Broadway.
Yes, the Prince
so
of Broadway.
It seems like we have been talking about the Prince of Broadway
for years.
For years.
Every producer had the best idea ever.
Right.
For the past 15 to 20 years.
And it finally, after all the hoopla,
I know. I did a table reading of a production.
Did you?
Oh yeah, it was horrible. But but that was like 10 years ago.
So
now it's apparently wonderful. I read the reviews.
The reviews were either kind or they were downright ugly.
Yes.
And Ben Brantley's was downright. Anybody else read the reviews of these things? Anybody? No. Lots of shaking. By the way, shaking of the head on radio doesn't work. Just gonna say that. But Ben Brantley said. In his second paragraph, you start to feel as if you're listening to some ADD-afflicted DJ with a passion for all the flavors of musicals going manic at the turntable.
I kind of love that, though. That sounds like a fun Friday night to me. Like, go have a couple cocktails at Sardi's and go do the crazy ADD DJ. I love it.
This might be in for you. So it was staged by Mr. Prince himself, along with Susan Stroman, the Stro Woman, as we used to call her when I... You know, I worked with her when she did Industrials.
Yeah. And a really precocious thing that people do on Broadway is like assume familiarity and call her Stro.
Oh.
Like I saw Stro the other day. It sounds so...
It's so funny. So I knew her. I mean, we were friends. We talked on the phone on occasion, just to social. But Stro never came up.
Yeah, because you're a legit once. Person. You're lit.
I'm lit, and I am too legit
too
to
quit. But you know who Mr. Brantley did love in that review is he gives such great, great love to Emily Skinner and Karen Zim, Karen Ziemba, who I introduced incorrectly one time at a gala as Karen Zamboni, and she did not like me.
That is not right. No, a lot of love for those two, and they did a duet from Follies that was supposed to be just marvelous.
Mm-hmm.
Other people in the show: Tony Yazbek, Janet DeKalb, Chuck Cooper,
Jane Fish.
There's somebody, and I don't really know this person, Jason Robert Brown.
Never heard of him.
Did the orchestrations. And I've totally forgot until I read this that Hal Prince directed Parade, which is Jason Robert Brown's, like,
I actually am really excited about this production, and I'm glad that it's being done. It really, I mean, if you take yourself so seriously, you're not going to probably enjoy it, because it is like a cool mixtape. But if you just want to go have a enjoyable night in the theater and see fantastic interpreters, and the cast is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you just want to go and have a good time? I think it's...
I know. I have a feeling it might be a little harsh. But it was not universal, but a lot of people didn't like it. To give some voice to people that did like it, Adam Feldman of Time Out New York said it's a pleasant collection of beloved and familiar Broadway songs, but there isn't much to it. You know, everything before the butt doesn't count, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She's real nice.
She's so sweet. Bless her heart. David Roney for Hollywood Reporter said an entertaining compilation despite the shortage of context. And Marilyn Stasko, I'm not wearing the right glasses, Stasko of Variety said a sumptuous review. Sumptuous.
Sumptuous.
Things aren't sumptuous all that much anymore. But that's the opening. It's something I'd go see. Who, by a voice vote, who would go see it? Tickets are $25.
I'm there then. Okay.
So I won't invite any of you to my fun musical theater play date. Y'all aren't invited. I'll go with you downtown to see something dark.
All right, yeah. Mr. Tracy Schultz. You know, let's take it just a little moment here because I hear in the back that the phones aren't ringing and we need the phones to ring.
Oh, so yes, we do need the phones.
Here you
just need your call.
512-472-5667. So I got to bring it down.
Break it down.
Not break it down. I got to bring it down.
Oh, we did. Never mind.
Well, y'all mentioned last week about the death of Thomas Meehan. So that was a pretty big deal. But tonight they're dimming the lights on Broadway for him. So that's substantial. I'm looking forward. Well, I'm not looking forward to the day. I know that when you pass away, Nick, they will dim the lights
at
for you.
At every Circle K.
Every Circle K. And
in
the sad
Southeast.
Truth is, there are no Circle Ks in New York City.
At every Sack and Pack.
Pack and Sack.
Pack and, mm-hmm.
Pack and Sack in Hackensack.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Every Starbucks will have a flavor.
There we go. That that would be a true... when Lin-Manuel Miranda goes, that's going to happen.
There you go.
But we also had another death this week. Bernie Pomerantz, who wrote The Elephant Man, only in his 70s, died from complications to cancer. Or I guess not complications. He died from cancer, mm-hmm. Which is really sad. And Elephant Man is the first Broadway show I was involved in.
I know.
And as I don't remember meeting him, I'm sure I did.
Yeah, we're close.
We were close. We were like this. I was the thumb. But anyway, it is a shame. So he did... The Elephant Man, like I said, was his most popular, and he did wrote several other things. And that Elephant Man, has everybody seen Elephant Man?
Yes.
Did anybody happen to get to see Philip Ingham do it?
Mm-mm.
Amazing.
Wait, I just wanted to back up. You said you thought you were the foam.
The thumb. The thumb. Oh, okay. So when you hold your two fingers up, your first and second finger, and the thumb is very far away from the other two fingers.
This has been a summer that has scorched the arts community. It has been a very, very hard summer with Barbara Cook and all of the losses. So.
Well, and I have to say, I was listening to I don't have to say it, but I'm going to. I was listening to one of my podcasts today, and they were talking about a lot of the deaths that have been going on. And I had a flashback to the mid-80s. And if we were doing this show back in the mid-80s, there would not be a week that goes by without three or four names being mm-hmm. spoken. And those would just be the people we know personally. Mm-hmm. And that's just really sad. But it has been a pretty tragic few weeks for the arts community in general.
It's an important time right now to find our way to our healing spots, whether that's a cast album or a new play to read or a piece of literature. The arts do heal, and it's important for us to find our way to theaters where we can all be together.
Yep. So, speaking of theater and sadnesses and losses, but also really cool things, The Great Comet is closing on Sunday, which is sad. Has anybody seen it?
I saw it twice, yeah.
Yeah, amazing piece of work. Did you see it with the Grobes?
Yes, I saw it.
That's what we call Josh Groban.
Okay.
It's our
I was not aware.
That's what
of
we
that.
Call it. It's just like calling Susan Stroman Stroh.
Yeah.
We got the Grobes.
Yeah. No, I mean,
did you enjoy it?
The staging was incredible. I was sitting in the house up on the stage, so I kind of lost a lot of lyrics, you just kind of went for the ride. Yeah. You know?
It was pretty amazing, and you walked into that theater and you did not recognize the Imperial Theater at all.
No.
You did not recognize the lobby, and the Imperial, I think, is the very first Broadway house I was ever in Fiddle on the Roof in 1969.
With a Mrs. Bette Midler.
Okay, was she in?
Seidel.
I don't know that she was. She might not have been at this.
She was busy. She was at the bath.
She might have been. Actually, I have to go back and look and see if she was. I saw it with Herschel Bernardi, who was the third Tevye. But there's an interesting article in the New York Times entitled Race, Money, and Broadway, How the Great Comet Burned Out. And it's just an interesting thing about the story. And it starts out with like the blame game. People have been placing the blame game.
Imagine.
And they're either blaming the... on one side, it's the producers for some really poor decision making. And on the other side, it's Oak for not standing up for the producers. Because, of course, we're referring to the backlash around the choice to replace Oak. And I can't pronounce his whole name. That's why I'm just saying Oak. Because we're like this.
You're the thumb.
More than the other thumb. But Some are blaming him for not standing up for the Prusas, which I believe in hindsight probably was truly just a financial decision. But then I totally forgot about the whole thing that started at the very beginning with Theater Ars and the
Ars Nova.
Ars Nova Theater, yeah. Ars Nova and all that stuff, which is definitely the producers. So I'm going with the, if I had to like tip the scales, I might go both ways. I might say it's both ways, but I would weigh a little heavier.
It's true.
I would probably might weigh a little heavier.
It is definitely something that if you're going to make a decision about, you need to look at the integrity of, I mean, Howard and Janet Kagan are lovely producers, but you look at all players involved, right?
But they made some really interesting decisions around the Ars Nova situation. That just made no sense to me. And I remember at the time we're going, why isn't Josh Groban making a stink about it at the time? Because his word would have gone very far, right? Was that a text
from
Nicole
Shiro saying, I love Josh Groban.
How strange of her to say that. I love me some Nicole. Okay, another interesting article in the Times. Where are you going? No, come back here.
I don't know.
He was thinking I was kicking him out.
Yeah.
Was about an actress named Sarah Caldwell, who is opening on a show called Charm Off-Broadway this week. She plays a transgender woman, and it's very interesting talking about the story of... a true story of a transgender woman who gave basically etiquette classes to trans women back in the 70s in New York, and she was an out and proud trans woman. The actress that won this role was a trans woman, transitioned at age 19, but was not out. Nobody knew she was trans, and she had to make the decision by taking this role to come out.
Wow.
And what a huge step that was. And it's really an amazing article, and it and I completely, as a trans woman myself, mm-hmm. who doesn't, you know, I'm out, but I don't, that's not how I introduce myself. I don't tell you unless it comes up, and I don't always throw that out there. It's hard because it paces you with a label. Mm-hmm. That you can't get rid of, and it's hard in the arts. And right now, to be a trans woman in theater is better than it was. It used to be impossible. Mm-hmm. So I could see a situation where she was out as a trans woman and not being able to get any work because they won't hire a trans woman no matter what they look like or act like to play a part that's not trans-identified. But they will hire a non-trans, a cis-identified man to play a trans woman a lot.
And which does have, yes, and there's lots of controversy around that.
But one of the things I loved about this, she said that she, you know, you'd see other things around films and things around trans women, and it always has sort of a tragic undertone. And this one doesn't. So I'm just going to read this one paragraph of the article. Miss Caldwell says she was drawn to the play because it wasn't a tragedy. Some movies with a trans theme... not so much anymore, but they always used to start with somebody being beaten up, she said, or somebody being hurt. This has nothing to do with that whatsoever. It touches, all it touches is this woman who has a gift, a skill to help folks along.
That's amazing. And Brant Pope, would you please say what you just said about your alumni who's directing that piece?
Look, my green donate button went off. The director of that production is Will Davis, who is a MFA directing a student graduate of UT and is the director of that and is a trans man.
Trans man,
so,
awesome.
So it's quite a great article in the Times.
And great pride for UT to have your director represented in such a beautiful way.
Yeah.
That makes me excited. I didn't know that, Lisa. I want to see that.
I do too. And actually, the play seems really good. It's opening off-Broadway at MCC.
That makes me really happy. Sweet. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. I missed that one. That's awesome.
I saw it.
I know you did.
I did. Let's see if there's anything I want to talk about before we... Oh, who watches the Game of Thrones?
Oh, I can't even talk. My mother and I have been on the phone like crazy.
Have you really?
She's in mourning.
I'm not going to say anything because not everybody has seen this last episode, but there is a Game of Thrones
musical parody
that's about to open.
It's kind of a parody itself. Oh, God, I'm so excited.
Yeah, and I'm actually... You know what? I didn't print it out, so I can't remember... What the
I just think of my little like 16-year-old self trying to do Shakespeare plays. Had Game of Thrones existed, I would have been such a better Macbeth at 17.
There you
know?
Go.
Like, I would have loved to have had Game of Thrones just to learn how to throw a cape.
When you're talking about when you're talking about trans women, you know, in roles in theater, actually there was a production of Romeo and Juliet where the Juliet was a trans
woman.
There you go. Where was that production?
It was in New York City in Bryant Park. It was Shakespeare.
Oh, right. I think I knew about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's super cool.
Yeah. Like, and she played Juliet. I didn't even, you know, and she was beautiful. She was
great. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Like me.
I'm not. I mean, you. I was going for you. You were going for the laugh. I was giving you a laugh.
I know. I'm with you. So just real quick, like there's a London production of Follies going on right now that's just getting all sorts of word o' mouth. It's going to be
with Imelda Staunton.
And it's gotten great. It's going to be broadcast on November 15th at theaters around around the country, so we can.
Do
see
we
it.
Get it?
I think so. Yes.
I hope so. If we do, we should go see it together.
We will. So we'll mark our calendars for November 15th. So we're going to take, we're going to get Tracy Schultz here first, and then we're going to take a little break. Oh. Tracy Schultz. What's that telephone number?
The phone number is 512-472-5667. They'll also tell you how you can be a part of the magic of co-op.
Yeah, be a part of the magic. Because you know why, Nick Mayo?
I want to make magic.
We have magic to do
just for you.
What's I want to make magic from? The magic show?
I think I just made it up.
I think I just made it up. Zazinga.
I think that's Game of Thrones, isn't it?
I think it probably is.
Bun, dun, dun, dun. I can't do this thing. Next week on Game of Thrones, I listen to Game of Thrones podcasts. That's how nerdy I am. Yeah, nerd. All right, so we're going to take a little break talking about, you know, we have the terrible hurricane that came through, but you gotta be able to laugh at yourself, don't you?
You do.
Harvey and Sheila Harvey and Sheila Harvey.
We are back. Sheila, you're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Nick to the First Power.
Nick First Power.
We have been talking to Craig Tungate, Candace Rusk, David Sittler, and Brant Pope. And now we're going to switch gears and we're going to talk to Mr. Pope and Mr. Sittler about their show that's going on at UT right now, Building the Wall. I have to tell you guys before I allow you to speak, my phone just dinged. I don't know if the audience heard that, but I did.
Ding, ding.
I'm going to turn it off because that's very unprofessional of me. I'm so excited to not only see this show, but to talk to you guys about it. When it was announced that the show was written, I was like all over it like wild on rice. David, you are an actor in this piece.
I am.
Which role do you play? Do you play Trump?
No, I play Rick. Actually, Trump is really an afterthought in the play.
Good. I can't wait to hear about that. Yeah. And Brant Pope, you were the director.
I am.
Okay. Tell us about the play.
This is Robert Jenkins' play that he wrote in a white hot fury, and sometimes that doesn't work very well when you're writing a play. In this case, it does. It's a spellbinding play that the premise is that what happens when the repatriation and deportation of those who are considered illegal in the country accelerates and the home countries won't take them. What happens? That's the premise and the story. And David's character is the former director of a private prison, because the private prisons are the only place that can handle this number of people. So based on that premise, the way the play unfolds is a gasper, as they say.
A gasper.
Yes. Wow. Actually, Robert Schenken based a lot of it on the book Into That Darkness by Gita Sarani, which is 70 hours of conversation with Paul Stengel, who was in charge of one of the concentration camps in Nazi Germany.
Oh, wow.
And has Robert himself been, have you been in communication? What has that collaboration been like in terms of Brant? Not only are you the director of the piece, but you're the head of the Department of Theater and Dance. You're the chair. What was that sort of dialogue in terms of, hey, I've got this play? What was the dialogue in terms of getting this piece to our UT family and to Austin audiences?
Well, Schenken's an alum, so we have a long, we were involved at the very early stages of his plays all the way in the Great Society. So we have an ongoing great personal relationship because of that. And he told us about this play when he had just written it, and I knew we couldn't do it as fast as he wanted to. So I convinced him to let us do the regional premiere if I got David Sittler and Fran Dorn to play the two roles. So UT, which usually does student productions,
right,
this is a full professional production, a regional premiere of this play. And so that was the agreement. And Schenken will be there along with a number of artistic directors from around the country and critics. And it's going to be quite a wonderful thing that a university can do when it premieres this kind of play.
Right. And if you looked at the website today, and there's some wonderful opportunities for talkbacks with Robert Schenken, correct?
Yes. Yeah. On the 7th, that's the evening and the afternoon and evening when everyone will gather. So there are panels and presentations and a big talk back afterwards.
And do we actually either talk about or see the wall being built?
You do not. And that's what sort of the whole play is about. It becomes actually a metaphor. But it's talked about, certainly. Mm-hmm. And like I say, Trump is really only mentioned 3 times in the play. And actually, he's been our best publicity for this, especially his speech in Arizona. It just, because when I first read this play back in March, I thought, how moot are we going to be when we get to be this point? Would he be impeached by now? Would this all be, you know, science fiction? And unfortunately, it's getting even closer.
Wow. Yeah. Tell our listeners a little bit about the part that Ms. Dorn plays. So the relationship, it's a two-hander.
Right.
So it's the two of you. Talk a little bit about the relationship with your co-star.
Right. Actually, Fran plays Gloria. She's a professor of history who has, there's been a lot of excitement about interviewing Rick because he's already been tried. He's waiting a sentence right now in a maximum security prison. And Gloria comes in and has written letters to Rick, and Rick decides that she's the one that will tell my story. So we're in an interview room in a maximum security prison, meeting for the first time, and after we kind of get over the initial shock of who she is, not expecting that, the play takes off from there.
Wow.
So the piece, understand, dealing with the as you say, the dystopian notion of what would happen if our policies carry through, our policies, the president's Trump's policies, I'll get it out. But also, and I find it interesting that private prisons play a role here. And we always talk about the criminal justice system and the need of a complete overhaul. And those of us on a certain side of the aisle feel that part of the problem, or a big part of the problem, is private prisons. Is that approached, is that dealt with at all in this piece?
It is. Private prisons, like Brant said, are really the place, we're talking millions of people, you know, Muslims, Mexicans, anybody who's here illegally is being rounded up. A lot like, you know, and as my character points out, we've been doing this forever. It's an American thing. We round people up. Eisenhower was doing it back in the 50s. You know, every president has done this, but this is on such a large scale, and normal facilities can't handle the overload.
Right.
So they go to the private prisons.
I'm curious, as you were describing that, I found my body having a reaction to just what you were describing. I'm interested, from a directorial standpoint and from an acting standpoint, how the catharsis of letting these things out. We all are sitting right in our own private prisons in a lot of ways, of our own angst, of our own turmoil of response. And like Lisa says so beautifully, is that the things that we say don't necessarily represent the station.
Right.
You say it so much beautiful.
Yeah, well, we should say right away, the views expressed here on Offstage and on the Air are not necessarily those of the station, the board of directors, or its staff, but it's merely our opinions voiced here on our show.
But the idea of how is this catharsis? How is this to let it out, to have a creative outlet at your fingertips? I think of what happened on the day after election. I went into rehearsal for a comedy with Jason Williams, and there was catharsis in the silliness. How has this helped you along your path and understanding of where we are as a country?
Let me see. I had a thought and it kind of went in my head. For me, it's a huge responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man is a credo. With great powers comes great responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And this play in our hands is really so important. And you don't want to think of, you know, theater as being just something that's, you know, newsworthy or anything else. But there's such a catharsis that happens in this play.
Mm-hmm.
And people are going to have a lot of discussion after this play. You know, and that's why I'm glad we're having talkbacks, unlike David Mamet. But
thank you. We talked about that a few weeks ago.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah. But it's going to spur a lot of conversations, building the wall. It's like I say, it was Robert's response to the election. I mean, I know I was in North Carolina after the election and doing rehearsing Christmas Carol, Scrooge. Mm-hmm. And I wondered where we would be a year from now. And personally, I still don't know where we're going to be.
Well, I know you guys brought a little clip of a scene. Can one of you set it up for it, and we'll set it up for us, and we'll listen to it.
Yeah, this is, was it the beginning of the play?
Yes.
We start at the top of the show, and it's just the first 3 minutes of this play. And this is, like I say, I walk in, and I see Fran's character, Gloria, and she's not what I expected.
Anything more than this would give away where the play is going. So this sets it up beautifully, and hopefully you want to know the rest of the story.
Okay, so this is a little piece with David Sittler and Fran Doren at UT School of Theater and Dance production of Building the Wall. Here we go. That is not the right one.
That's the overture? Actually, yeah.
And now the question is, where did I put that CD? Oh, you know what? I know where it is. Here we go.
You mind if I record? I'll also take notes, but this allows me to be accurate.
I imagine we're both being recorded right now.
Really?
And watched.
I think that's supposed to be for my safety.
Or mine.
You think I'm a threat?
Are you? Kind of weird when you think about it. They don't want me to kill myself, so they can kill me. You worried about your safety?
No.
But you're nervous.
Sure.
I like that. That you're honest. And that stood out in your letters. That's why I picked you.
I think if we're not honest, what's the point?
I haven't met a lot of college professors before. Lawyers, yeah. Shrinks. But... you don't look like what I thought.
How's that? You mean black?
I'm not allowed computer access in here. I don't know what they think I'm going to do on a computer, reach out to my huge fan base.
Is my race a problem for you?
I never know what word to use. Black, African, American.
I like black. Is it a problem, Rick?
I'm just surprised. Doesn't matter to me. I'm not racist. I lived and worked with all kinds of people.
Hispanic?
In Texas? Are you kidding? You could throw a rock in any direction and you'd hit one. Unfortunate expression there.
Muslim?
Sure.
You have Muslim friends?
I knew some, but those people, they kind of stick together, you know?
So you had no personal animus against Muslims or Hispanics?
No, ma'am.
Yet, here you are. Happened, and why? Maybe help us all understand so that nobody else winds up in your situation? We can do that. But you have to be honest with me. Can you do that, Rick? Can you just be honest?
Okay.
I want to hear your side, Rick, in your own words. That's why I'm here. If you're honest with me, I'll see that what you say is printed just like you say it. No editing, no filter. Your words.
So that's why you're here, Professor. You're what, performing a social service? No thought for yourself?
Well, to be completely honest, on the 9-hour drive down here today in my ancient Ford that should have had a complete engine rebuild a year ago, I did allow myself a tiny fantasy about a big-ass book deal. But that's not my only motivation. Obviously, there's interest in you, in your story. I think it's important. Maybe I write a book. Or maybe at the end of the day, I just go home and burn all my notes.
In that case, what's the point in me talking to you? Why are you here?
Oh, we are back. That was wonderful. That sounds powerful. Nothing? Okay.
Nope.
we're all in rap. But let me just say, we'll take a quick tangent here. During one of the breaks, I had David give me a number between 2 and 52. What did you choose?
7.
7. Let's see what we got. Let's see if I choose the right CD this time.
Hi, I'm Joey Elrose with Memphis the Musical, and I play Huey Calhoun, and you are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin. 91.7. Hockadoo
with Memphis.
I haven't heard that one. That was a good choice, David.
Oh, okay.
Yes, David, thank you.
You're
so
welcome.
That wonderful scene, as we were saying while we were on that break, or for us it was a break while it was being played, how excited we all are about seeing this show. You haven't opened yet. When do you open?
Tomorrow night. We run through the 10th.
Okay. And you're at what theater on the UT campus?
So it's the Oscar Brockett Theater in the main Winship building on campus.
Okay. And where should folks go to get more information?
If they go to jointhedrama.org, all the questions will be answered.
Jointhedrama.org. Well, thank
you. Easy parking, everything else.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for joining us on Offstage and on the Air. Hopefully, if you have time, you can stick around and join us backstage. We appreciate you being here, and best of luck with the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Okay, that was Brant Pope and David Sittler. They're here with UT's School of Theater and Dance presenting Robert Schenken's Building the Wall from August 30th to November 10th. For more information, oh my God, I forgot what you said, but I had written theaterdance.edu. Do you remember what it is?
Join the drama.
Jointhedrama.org. We will be right back.
When people build walls.
Great. So let's just talk locally for the shortest of little times. I have to tell you, but I'm going to.
You choose to.
On the show a few weeks ago, or last week, no, it was a few weeks ago, we had Austin Theater Project's Perfect Life on with, it was written by, amongst other people, he'll kill me because I can't remember everybody's name, but Larry Hockman, the Tony Award winning orchestrator and composer. And I went to see it.
Yes.
It is, it's a very wonderful show to watch. And what I really especially loved is Larry is so good at orchestrations, and the music is gorgeous. The orchestrations are full and rich and beautiful in that little space at Trinity Street Theater. And it's in my opinion, for just this one person, I believe it's worthwhile seeing.
Hey, nice. I'd like to hear that.
Yeah, it's got a long road to perfection, but it is a perfect life, and this is the premiere. I believe it's the world premiere of this piece, and it was written by Larry Hockman, and I don't have the information here, with another gentleman who and Larry got really angry with me when I didn't mention his name last time, so get angry again, and also Lori Hockman. Is also involved as the book writer. So that was really good to see. And it was, I think it's playing for 3 more weeks. For more information, austintheaterproject.org. You got anything you wanted to talk about while we're here?
You know, last week we had on the Tex Arts production of Best of the Whorehouse in Texas.
Did you go see it?
I did, and I had such a fun time.
Did you?
I did. Speaking of Department of Theater and Dance, the UT Department of Theater and Dance was represented beautifully out at Tex Arts.
Yes, it was.
With Lauren DiFilippo and J. Dylan Gibson and Ryan Alvarado and Emily McIntyre, and great performances out at Tex Arts.
Let me tell you something. Those voices were lush, and I'm actually sorry I couldn't be on the show last week to talk about it, because I had seen it prior to that, and it was they did a really good job, especially with the singing.
They really did.
And I have to say, I'm sure it's been done before, but if it hasn't, they're brilliant for casting.
Jewel
as a man.
Yeah.
That duet with a man is it. I think it brought it up a step.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I had a great experience, and Brant, it represented your students beautifully. They were great in it. So it was great to see them outshining in the world.
Awesome. Let's go to Today in Theater History.
Today in Theater History.
That is our theme song.
Today in Theater History.
It is the birthday of one Shirley Booth.
Ooh.
So who here can name something other than
Come back
Hazel?
To the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean.
Come back to the Five and Dime. You are correct. Anybody else?
Dark at the Top of the Stairs. Thank you, Brant
Dark
Pope.
Dark at the Top of the Stairs, Brant Pope. Come Back, Little Sheba.
Come Back, Little Sheba. Well,
yeah. Come Back, Little Sheba. Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
Oh, that's what I was actually thinking about when I said
okay,
that.
Well, okay. Okay. So that is another actor who had their birthday today was one Elizabeth Ashley.
Whenever I think of Elizabeth Ashley, I just think of her clearing her throat.
I have only seen her in one show live. I saw her in Agnes of God. And
did she start it with this?
It would have made it for a better show if she did. I found that one difficult. This is also the marriage anniversary of two people that these are not really well-known people. Lawrence Oliver And Vivian Leigh.
Oh, the Leighs.
Vivian Leigh and Laurence Olivier's birth anniversary.
What are we doing for it? Are they inviting us over? What's going on?
Yes, we can all dig ourselves underground and go meet them. And let's see. This also is the anniversary of Stephen Sondheim's new play, Where Everything is Everything, opened off-Broadway, starring one Daisy Egan, who is the youngest, or was the youngest, Tony Award winner for her performance in The Secret Garden.
Shh, it's a secret.
I was going to do this for Nicole, but she's not there, so I'm not going to do it. No, I'm going to do it. Terrence Mann opened as Frankenfurter in the revival of Rocky Horror Show. And I know that she loves that kind of stuff. So yep. There we go. If I were to be completely honest, it said Rocky Horror Show, and my mind had Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Oh, I'm so wrong. Birthdays, William Ivy Long, who was represented in some show that I talked about today.
He's going to get a portrait of Sardi's
portrait.
He's going to get a Sardi's portrait. That came from David Sittler, who is about 8 miles away from a microphone.
So
We just repeated it. So we're going to play a little song that Shirley Booth sings in a show called Juno. Juno?
Yeah. No, I don't
know.
Did you
ever hear of it?
No, I don't know.
Never heard of it either.
I heard about the movie with Allison Janney and that what's her name?
Juno. That's true. Well, this ran for 16 performances. And rarely a show that runs for so short gets a Broadway cast album, but it did. So here we go. We're going to hear a little bit of Shirley Booth. May she rest in peace.
Tell me, didn't it rain, or rain, or rain?
Okay, we are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick One Time.
Nick One Time!
We have been talking with Brant Pope, David Sittler, Candace Rusk, and Craig Tungate, and now we're going to switch gears now and talk directly to Candace and Craig and their musical, Rosetta the Musical. Before we do that, I have Tracy Schultz staring at me thinking I'd forgotten about him, but I tricked you. We didn't.
We did, actually,
but go ahead.
I just want to come in one more time and say that we are getting very close to our
radio
goal
station.
Here. Well said.
Thank you. So let's talk to Candace and Craig. We've been following this with you for a while. You've done, and Craig, you have been involved in the beginning, but I've my primary contact has been with Candace.
Yeah, she started it.
Yeah, so let's talk about the show, generally speaking. What is it? Let's talk about Rosetta and her life and stuff like that.
All righty. Actually, the genesis wasn't in 2013, but I had seen a BBC special on Rosetta Tharpe and then an American Masters and was completely taken up. But I was taken up and swept up such a while ago, I can't remember, except for the fact that she reminds me of my grandmother with a guitar, because she dressed like my Polish grandmother, and I would have loved to see my mother with a Gibson F-hole. But Rosetta was just, I think that basically what the thing that inspired me was, I started guitar really young, and had I seen a photograph of a 40-year-old woman with this hollow body guitar, I mean, rocking it, I would have, I think, as a lot of young girls, would have felt more inspired that there had been actually a pioneer before us.
Sure.
And that's one of the reasons that I wrote it, is because she was a pioneer.
Okay, and you wrote the book and the lyrics?
Correct, yes.
And Craig, you wrote the music?
That's correct.
What's, so obviously she is a singer. She's known for a lot of gospel songs, mm-hmm. mostly. Yeah. She's called Sister Rosetta Tharpe, I believe.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And this has also got original music in it.
Well, actually, it's all original music.
Okay.
We're not using any of her music.
Not
we
using
made
any
that
of her
decision
music.
Because there are other shows that are using her music, you know, the kind of jukebox mm-hmm. kind of musicals, and we said, we don't want to do that. We want to have original music that tells the story and keeps the story going and you know, and tell her life that way. So,
is the music all in the style of her music, or is it a different pastiches or different types of music?
I tried to keep it a lot in the era of time that we're discussing, like when she's in the Cotton Club, make it sound like the Cotton Club. When she's in, you know, church, make it sound like a church. But when we're talking about their life, I felt like we could be contemporary in that. We didn't have to be caught in 1960 or 1970 or whatever. Just make it like that. but and, very much her.
And talk about the actress. I'm sure you've had to cast an actress to play this role. How has that process been?
We should actually say that this is a reading series for Spectrum.
Great.
Spectrum Theater in Austin. It's been workshopped about 6 times, mm-hmm. Including Provincetown, Massachusetts at Provincetown Theater. It's been read in Creed, Colorado, and also in Austin several times at the Vortex. And so it's had a number of workshops. So it's a concert performance. This is not the entire script. We are, you know, we're still in development. And so at the end of the month, we're going to be doing concert performances, and we are just auditioning today.
Oh, how are they going?
Hey.
Great, actually.
You remarkable. Actually had to postpone your auditions, didn't you, because of the rain?
Yes.
Well, yes.
Saturday, yeah.
Yeah.
So is this a first collaboration between you two? Forgive me, I don't know.
It is.
It is. How has that been to get to know each other through this?
It's been great. I mean, we were introduced by a friend that we have in common. We didn't know each other at all. We met 3 years ago, and we've been working on this since then, and it's a very good partnership. We feel very at ease with each other. I trust her. She's a great playwright, and I trust her instincts for what she creates. It was a little strange for me at first because the way she writes lyrics are very different from mine. I'm very wordy. She's more like a poet. She uses, you know,
brevity
phrases. Yeah, very brevity. But it's been great. I've really embraced it and loved working with it. It's been very good.
Should we tell them that we were introduced by a mutual psychic?
Sure.
Hey, that's super cool.
It was pretty cool. It was
that's how Lerner and Loma.
In your future, I see you meeting somebody.
It was literally in the
stars.
She's
a wordsmith. He's a tinkler of the ivy.
Yeah.
So here's what we're running a little low on time. So we're going to keep talking right up to the bitter end.
Yeah.
And we're going to go out playing the medley you have.
Okay.
Right. And we'll be able to hear a little piece of the music. Are y'all able to stay for backstage?
Yes.
Sure.
Great. Yes. So we'll continue this conversation on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get that at offstageonair.com or through iTunes. And people will be able to get a little bit more information. We went a little crazy with time. I blame Tracy Schultz.
Always.
Of course.
And we just have time for the phone number, 512-472-5667. Give us the particulars. This is a reading or a reading at the Millennium Complex, right?
Yes, that's right. It's going to be a concert performance, meaning it's going to be heavy on the score with some dialogue from the play just to set up the songs. So, yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Well, we're going to continue this conversation over backstage among the dumpsters, as we said. But I will thank you for speaking to us. That's Candace Rusk and Craig Tongate.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
And they are producing this along with Spectrum Theater Company as part of their reading series. It's the Millennium Entertainment Center. And it plays September 29th and 30th. For more information, you can find information at the Spectrum website. Also, there's a Facebook page. Just look up Rosetta the Musical.
A musical.
The Rosetta A Musical. And so we'll go out listening to a little medley of, when was this recorded?
It's about a year and a half ago from one of our workshops. It's
okay.
A live one.
So we'll listen to that. Please join us backstage at Offstage for more of this conversation. And in the meantime, stand by for Austin Monitor News. See ya.
Bye.
Okay, the curtain has just come down on We Make It Rain Money, the musical. The story of a struggling young artist looking to make money in the big city by catching feral rats, cooking them up in meat pies, and selling them to cast members of Sweeney Todd. We've come out the backstage door, down the stairs. We're standing out here outside the theater amongst the dumpsters. And the puddles of unnamed liquid. And we have here Craig Tongate and Candace Rusk. Unfortunately, Brant David and Nick could not stay. I think it was a cabal. But you two were kind enough to brave the elements and come back here with me. So welcome.
Thank you.
You know what? I don't think I have your correct microphone on. Candace, say a few words.
I say hello.
Yeah, your microphone is totally not on. Now you could probably talk.
Okay. Hello.
There you go. Okay. I may or may not cut that little piece out.
There you go.
Okay. So I want to start out by just continuing our conversation about Rosetta, a musical. Not the musical. Why not the musical?
That was just what I used for It's just called Rosetta, but that's what the Facebook page is.
Okay, great. It
just says a musical. I guess maybe the musical is taken. I can't remember. It was a couple years ago.
Okay. Well, I think it's really exciting. And we touched a little bit about the music and keeping it with the style of the time era. And I don't know that we actually said the time era.
Okay. Well, you know, for her time era, it's a lot. But we focus mainly in this play with from 1930s through the early 70s, really.
Oh, okay. And when did she pass?
73, I think, isn't it? Right?
73 or 74.
73, 74. Yeah. Well, her music is great. As I was, we heard a little piece of it when I accidentally played one of the pieces from it, Didn't It Rain, with the Sammy Price Trio.
Yes.
And I was listening to different pieces of music from her today to just choose just the right one. And yeah. There's hardly words to explain. And so this story, there's a narrative, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the narrative. What part of her life do we touch on?
Actually, it's pretty broad. It starts off when she's a child and it sort of centers around her first guitar a little bit, which I named Sweetwood. And it carries all the way through. You know, it was an interesting thing we were talking earlier about the play about trans women and in the 1970s. What's it called?
It's called, I don't remember.
Okay. But,
Starts
you know,
with a C.
But there's stories of tragedy. Like, you know, it opens up and trans women's getting beaten up.
Right.
And same with a lot of plays about minorities. I mean, in particular, Nina Simone's life and how there's so much tragedy built up. And there certainly is tragedy in Rosetta's life. I mean, she was in a unmarked grave for 27 years.
My.
With someone with such great influence that her videos are still available, her films are still available on YouTube. And for those to still be archived.
Whose film's available on YouTube?
Rosetta Tharpe singing.
So she films of her singing.
Yes.
She did not produce films.
No.
Okay. Films of her performing,
and mostly in Europe. Tom must say too, we didn't really honor her very much here.
We weren't very kind to her,
but in Europe they were bright enough to actually film some of her stuff.
You know, it's actually interesting around race relations in general. I read an article about a man, a black man who grew up in Europe and didn't get. Grew up in the United States and came to Europe and didn't get that thing that you get when you go to a maitre d' at a restaurant.
Right.
And he felt so weird because he wasn't treated less than in Europe. Mm-hmm. And so Europe has a history of treating people like people for the most part.
And that's why they at least the stars, I can't say for their people who are just living there as domestics and the rest, but the stars, and that's one of the reasons they went over there. But I wanted to just finish the thought, which is around tragedy. That her inspiration does live on in her guitar at the end of the piece. And so it's not, you know, even though she had a really difficult time losing a leg to diabetes at the end, was pretty much forgotten maybe the last 7 years of her life, just in terms of playing and I think that she also suffered as a woman, being an older woman playing guitar. Was discriminated against, and
You know what you said earlier on about just seeing a woman with a guitar was unusual back then. It wasn't really an instrument that women. All right, we had a little stop there, so we're gonna pick right back up. We were talking about women and guitars.
Yeah, and I was talking about the fact that just last year, Rolling Stone had like 100 greatest guitarists of all time, and I don't think there was maybe one woman in there, and that's just ridiculous. I mean, Rosetta didn't make the cut, and yet she influenced Chuck Berry, you know, Keith Richards, Little Richard, so many people, you know.
Right.
That's forgotten.
And actually, I was watching a film about the Beatles last week, and I heard George Harrison do a lick that came right out of Rosetta, mm-hmm. and I can't remember what the song was, but I'm like, wow. So back in the, you know, one of the things that was about a lot of the cadre of black artists that went over to Europe in the early 60s influenced the British wave. So influenced the Yardbirds, the Who, the Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan, and they will give credence to them. Bob Dylan loved Rosetta, and a number of other artists have mentioned her as well.
Because she was touring, not even though she was a gospel artist, and then had gone back to being gospel. When she was in Europe, she was touring with Muddy Waters,
Lead Belly,
you know, these kind of people, you know. And so
Sugar
Pie. All the guys that heard of them, you know, like Keith Richards and Pete Townsend, and they were coming in to watch her.
Well, most people understand that rock and roll's roots are in soul music and gospel music.
Right.
But it's funny to hear some people that aren't necessarily educated in music at all, and I don't pretend to be myself, but they get really angry, especially those of a certain right-wing persuasion, when the idea that American rock and roll is really basically an offshoot of soul and
gospel
So so it's interesting that that all happened. Well, I want to switch and talk to you guys about you guys, but I also want to give you the opportunity to talk more about the show. So we're not relegated to the same rules here, so we can tell people that they have to go see it. We can tell people how much it costs and when it is. So tell are tickets on sale now.
It's free.
It's free.
And it's supported by the City of Austin Cultural Division.
Mm-hmm.
Scriptworks is our fiscal sponsor.
Scriptworks.org.
Yeah. So they're very instrumental in getting support for this. We've gotten three cultural contract grants to develop this.
Good.
And so the workshops are free. It's the end of the month. Spectrum Theater has partnered with us as a co-producer. And they're drawing in their from their cadre of great talent that we hope to also pull in. They're actually opening, I believe, it's public knowledge, they're taking over the theater at the Youth Millennium Complex.
The Millennium Youth Center,
yes,
I think it's called.
Yes, that's it. And it's on, what, Hargrave?
Yep.
So it's going to be the first performance there. It's 150-seat theater.
Awesome.
And they're going to build a stage and everything. So Billy Harden has been working with them, and so it will be another venue for Austin, which is pretty wonderful.
Which we need, and it's great that Spectrum, which is an offshoot of Pro Arts Collective and the late, great Boyd Vance, and that cadre of people that really need a voice, and I couldn't be happier that they're doing that, and that they get a physical space is rocking. It's too bad they couldn't just be given the Boyd Vance Theater, but that's a whole nother
story. Yeah, and we also want to mention that Maddie Robinson, who is a Spectrum member and also a master pianist in her own right, is going to be music director along with Craig.
Great.
And she's just dynamic and wonderful. And so right now there's we're going to probably add a bass. Maddie plays piano. Craig does guitar. And the cast will do the vocals. And then there'll be pieces of the play. So this isn't the full musical. We'd need a heck of a lot more money.
Mm-hmm.
And we would certainly be much farther along in our planning if it had been. But it's going to be great. So it's September 29th and 30th.
At the Millennium Youth Complex. And tickets, I assume, would be available on the Spectrum site. Oh, there's no tickets.
No tickets.
Are you taking reservations? Or are we just going to...
For donors.
For donors. Okay.
Yeah,
so just show up.
Right.
29th and 30th.
And by the way, this is directed by Lily Wolf.
Right. So Lily Wolf is one of the premier directors here in Austin. So
yeah,
that's
she
great.
Is. She's been great. So.
Well, awesome. Thank you. Best of luck with that.
Thank you, Lisa.
And then so we're just going to zip right on. And talk about you guys, which we know nothing about.
Yeah.
Craig, what's your story?
I'm a lifelong musician, pretty much.
Okay, thanks for being on the show.
I grew up in Round Rock.
Uh-huh,
and
I'm sorry.
It was great. It was Mayberry back when I grew up here, so it was great.
It was Mayberry?
Mayberry.
Mayberry,
you know, okay. It was like Andy Griffith show.
Got it, I'm old enough.
Yeah, it was 2,000 people now, you know, it's not like it was now. Anyway, I started playing music at a very early age, like 12. And I've been playing ever since. And
good.
I've been
what
in
do
bands.
You play?
I'm a guitarist, a bassist, a drummer, singer.
Okay.
I did a lot of stuff. I've had several bands here of many different persuasions. I started along with the Esther's Follies girls, Rotel and the Hot Tomatoes in 1986.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and that's
old.
Been going for 31 years now. So,
playing in a situation like with bands, rock and roll, country, whatever it is, in the club scene, is very different from musicals.
It is.
How did you make that leap?
Well, I've always written songs. I've always been a songwriter.
Okay.
I'd written a one-man show for myself, but I'd never collaborated with anybody on a musical.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard something last year I thought was very appropriate from Trey Anastasios on the band Fish. He's writing his first musical. And so his perspective was like mine. He said, I didn't realize writing a musical is going to be like trying to, it's like trying to parallel park a cruise ship. Because just when you think you got it, whoop, everything shifts and then it's not that dream. I mean, I'm not used to writing. Like, we've thrown out 8 or 10 songs, you know, just because this just doesn't fit anymore. And there's nothing wrong with the songs. They just don't fit. And it's like, oh, okay. So I don't have an ego attachment to it, but still, it was a little weird.
You can still have an ego attachment. Well, that's one of the hardest things. I just read an article last week, and I experienced it on the show that I took to Broadway. Like these really beloved songs that become very near and dear to the entire cast and creative, that you figure out it just doesn't serve the piece and it has to go, and how difficult that is.
Yeah.
And fortunately for a lot of musical theaters, and the show I'm talking about specific, Oh Brother, when we did a cast album, we put the number in, but it was never, it never made it to opening night in Broadway.
So
that's the same thing. So I can certainly understand how crazy that must seem to you.
It seemed a little weird, but and like I said, and I had never collaborated really with especially someone who's, even though she's a musician in her own rights, you know, it was she's giving me lyrics and I just have to look at them and go, okay, you know, and let the magic show up, and it's been working. It's great.
It has shown up.
So is this the first musical you've worked on?
Yeah.
And how did I mean, I know you were introduced by...
Yeah, we have a friend. He's a personal friend. It's not just like somebody we go to, but he's a personal friend.
Right. It wasn't Bo Weekle Moose.
Happens to be someone who is a medium.
Well, so my question is, so if I were in your position and somebody came to me and said, hey, I have a friend that wants to collaborate on a musical, I'd say, not really what I do. So what made you take that shift?
Well, because he said the music's on Sister Rosetta Tharpe. And I went, oh, well, I gotta see what this is about. And then he introduced over email, and then she sent me a clip from the Fringe Fest of the very first little production they did, like 10 or 12 minutes or something, with a two-girl show with her idea of what Rosetta was going to be like. And I watched that, and I went, I like this. I like the way she writes. I like what these people are saying, and I love Rosetta, so why wouldn't I want to do this?
Let's okay, so this is your first foray into theater music or the theater world.
Well, actually not. I was an actor in high school and college.
You didn't tell me that. Well, you're not giving full disclosure.
I wear too many hats. I've done shows as Zach Scott back in the 70s.
Oh, okay.
I did musicals.
So you had an interest in theater before.
Oh, yeah.
Are you born and bred Austonian? Round Rockian?
I was born in Luling, but yes, I got here at 18 months to Round Rockian.
Okay.
And lived here in the last 30-something years.
Okay, so but you did theater. So why didn't your path take you to theater instead of...
I was busy making a living playing music.
Okay, got it.
Pretty much it, you know.
Did you do musicals when you were in high school?
I did. I played Peachum, and I've been My Fair Lady, you know, and I did a lot of things in high school and college, and like I said, as ex.
Any desire to perform again?
Not much.
What about you, Candace? Have you performed?
A little bit. I'm actually going to do... I'm a storyteller, too, which is coming up. I'm going to be doing
a storytelling
night at the North Door with the Violet Crones.
Oh, cool. So it's at the North Door when?
September 10th. It's called Sex, Death, and Sleep.
Awesome.
And we're going to be doing... everybody's going to be doing a bit on sex, death, or sleep, or all of them. So Kate Berry, Bernadette Knoll.
Bernadette Nason?
No.
Bernadette Knoll. There's two Bernadettes in town?
Yeah, two famous ones.
Because Bernadette Nason also does storytelling.
Reynolds, Nettie Reynolds, who put it all together. Sorry, Nettie. And Kate Berry.
Cool.
And so all of us are going to be, and Catherine Moore. So five of us are going to be talking about it. I also want to say that Craig does one of the most beautiful renditions of "When I Wish Upon a Star"
it's a karaoke version. But I worked for Disney for about almost 12 years.
I've heard of them. Palantum.
I think so.
I have. I really.
I
have.
Did children's records for them for
for
about a dozen years or so.
Yeah. Here in town.
Yes, with Mr. Gary Powell out in Oak Hill area.
Cool. Beautiful studio.
Yeah.
Beautiful recording studio. I was discouraged doing that by my high school teacher. My drama teacher didn't like me, so I never got cast. But I mentioned doing radio gigs and stuff, being behind the scenes. I started out writing songs when I was a kid, wrote them as a kid, went on to poetry, went on to writing short stories, plays, and then this is actually my first musical.
Oh, awesome. That's cool. Your very first musical. And it's you've been working on it for a while. Yeah, it's a passion piece for you.
Four years.
Yes.
4 years all together.
Well, Hamilton took 8, and that's with someone who's very, very well connected. So
it takes a long time. I mean, nobody's accusing you of taking your time.
No, I don't know. Well, I have been. I it's been a long, long process, and I have to say that I was thinking, even though I felt alone, and writing is a lonely thing.
It is.
Even though some of my joyous moments is getting together with Craig. Mm-hmm. But we've had a lot of support from the theater community.
Good.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say that the Spectrum reading really is the culmination of a long time searching for people to produce it, because musicals are expensive.
Yeah. Yes, they are. So back to you. How did you find yourself into script playwriting? When did that start?
I lived in Provincetown, and I think it almost comes naturally after a while.
Did you do theater? Were you working in theater prior to writing?
Yes. I actually did write some musical numbers for a musical on AIDS, community musical on AIDS in Boston in the late 70s. And I actually wrote the finale with Roland Tech, who is in New York, and it was called Season of Light. Awesome. So I've written a couple of songs then, but then just didn't. I guess it's a natural culmination for me. I like to write. I've written music and songs all my life. So it was just kind of this blend. And then being inspired by someone, so great as Rosetta Tharpe, it was almost, it's hard to not do it actually for me.
So let's go back to the genesis of Candace Rusk and her journey to theater specifically. How did you find your way into the theater community?
Again, it was in Provincetown, and where you get O'Neill and Tennessee Williams and so many other artists that started. You know, it just seems to be in the sand. I mean, that might be corny.
Yeah, but you know what? I might grow up in Milwaukee, but it doesn't necessarily mean I brew beer.
Yeah, I know. I guess it's in the sand, and it's in the bars, and it's in the community.
So how did you? When did you first walk into a theater, or when did you first sit down?
When I was a kid, my grandmother lived in Chicago, and we were walking down one of the major streets in Chicago, and I saw a woman dressed in a swimsuit swinging between the arches of a theater to promote a theater. And that was my inspiration, because I couldn't believe anybody would be out there in November in a swimsuit swinging. And I can't even remember what the play was. But my grandmother took me to see... not Gypsy, because that was prohibited by the Catholic Church. Mame. Yeah, so that was in Chicago.
Also,
so
not the greatest example of motherhood out there.
Which sort of fit my life. Yeah. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I'm so happy to have you guys on the show. We're going to go out.
Thank you.
Underneath us right now is that song that we weren't able to play on the air, and that's Rosetta Tharpe, Sister Rosetta Tharpe and Sammy Price Trio. Didn't It Rain? We're listening to it right now. Doesn't it sound gorgeous?
Is Marie on this one? No. So Marie Knight was her musical partner and her intimate. So.
Yeah, no, this is just Sister Rosetta Tharpe, Sammy Price Trio. So then Rosetta Tharpe was a member of the LGBTQ community.
In a very undertoned way.
Right. Well, you couldn't be out back then. So.
And it shows up in the script.
Gospel star, too.
Yeah. What?
She was a gospel star, too, so, you know, hush, hush.
Oh, definitely hush, hush. Well, we're not hush-hushy now. We're going to sing it loud and strong. Thank you guys so much for
been a pleasure
coming
you.
Back here.
Thank you.
All right, you guys, see ya.
All right.
Bye. Rain all night.